Tenet is the latest film written and directed by Christopher Nolan. It's a riff on spy movies, Bond movies in particular, with a time travel twist. Originally scheduled as a summer tentpole release, the studio delayed it a few times due to the pandemic, until finally opening it in theaters here in the States in September. It's now available on VOD. I'm Glenn Weldon, and today we're talking about Tenet on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR, so don't go away.
Support for NPR and the following message come from Splitit, a new way to pay when you shop. When you're ready to pay, just choose Splitit at checkout to split your payment on your credit card and pay over time. There's no interest, no application, no fees. It's fast and easy. Splitit gives you more spending power to buy the things you want to live a bigger life. And we all deserve to get more for our hard-earned money. Split your payments and live big. Go to splitit.com today.
Welcome back. I'm joined today by NPR Music's Lindsay McKenna. Hey, Lindsay.
Hey there.
All right. So Tenet stars John David Washington as a CIA agent who gets recruited by a mysterious organization that is attempting to prevent World War III. That's it. That's the plot. It's as simple as that. Along the way, he travels to various exotic locations, tangles with an arms dealer played by Kenneth Branagh, conspires with the arms dealer's wife played by Elizabeth Debicki, and gets help from an impeccably dressed Robert Pattinson, among others. Michael Caine shows up too because it's a Nolan film and rules are rules. And speaking of rules, this film has a lot of lore to impart to set up and execute its time travel premise. It's a great-looking film, but critics can't seem to agree on how well it delivers on its story. Some say it's more brilliant blockbuster filmmaking from Nolan, but there's been a definite, I wouldn't say backlash, but there's been a sizable contingent who say this film is an emotionally empty miss featuring a nonsensical plot. Now, Lindsay, that's a nice wide swath of reactions. Where do you fall along that scale?
So there is a line pretty early in the film. This is not a spoiler, but I will say that it felt sort of like a instruction for the rest of the entire movie. A scientist figure explaining some sort of piece of equipment to the protagonist, literally the protagonist.
That's his name.
Says, don't try to understand it, just feel it.
Either way we run the tape, you made it happen. Don't try to understand it. Feel it.
And at that moment, I decided I was just going to feel the rest of the entire movie. And that being said, I should also note that I witnessed this movie at a drive-in. So I was in my car during the midst of the summer surge in Florida where I've been. Mm-hmm. And at that moment, in my car, fiddling with the volume on the radio, I decided I was just going to feel it. I described Tenet as gloriously galaxy brain. So if you're familiar with that meme where the human sort of like transcends and it starts with just a glowing brain and it becomes the entire body sort of pulsing, that was how I felt. It checks all of the typical Nolan boxes. It's super stylish, as you said, great tailoring, amazing set pieces, like honestly. And I think it aims to be smart if it follows through on the smartness. I'm not a physicist, so I can't really verify, but it's aiming for that.
Yeah.
It felt like a Bond movie. You mentioned it. The thing that's ironic is that there was a Bond movie that was supposed to come out earlier this year. We didn't get it, but we did get Tenet, and I think it's in part because Christopher Nolan was like pretty dead set on this movie coming out, and unfortunately, like dead set is the right word. Like we're in the midst of a global pandemic, and I experienced this at a drive-in in my car.
Yeah.
Did I like Tenet? Yes. Did I feel like I shouldn't have been seeing Tenet? Also, yes.
I am so with you on so many of those points. I mean, when you think about it, Nolan has co-written a lot of the films that he's directed, but he's been on his own, you know, writing the screenplay by himself on only four. 2000's Memento, 2010's Inception, 2017's Dunkirk, and now this. And all four of those, as you and our producer Will Jarvis pointed out, have something of a puzzle box quality to them. They all play with chronology, with the character's experience of linear time, and also, by extension, the audience's experience of linear time. You know, I was thinking about the film Mank, where there's a scene in that film where the character of Mank tells, I think it's John Houseman, that a film's story doesn't have to be a flat chronology. It can turn on itself like a cinnamon roll, he says. And so if we extend that metaphor, this film, plot-wise, is more like a funnel cake. It just you're just drizzling it back and forth wildly all over the damn place. So when I think he's left to his own devices, look, he is the 800-pound Hollywood gorilla. No studio is going to note him to death. And I think when that happens, for me at least, his confidence in his own abilities and his confidence that the audience is willing to go along with him can get away from him. I did not follow this film scene to scene. I couldn't synopsize the plot of this thing for the life of me. And I just found out this morning, by the way, that I'm not alone on that. The article that was on Vulture this year that's basically like, here's what happened in that film Tenet you just saw. Here is a beat-by-beat plot description. That was the 9th most read New York Magazine article of 2020 and the 3rd most read Vulture article of 2020. But here's the thing, didn't feel it was necessary. I was in when a scene was happening. When any of those action set pieces were going on, I was totally there. And I'm not being an apologist because I think this movie has some big old flaws. I mean, I think it is emotionally inert. I do not think any character has any kind of chemistry with any other character on screen. And when you've got a guy played by Robert Pattinson on that screen who can smolder with anything and anyone. I mean, he burned up the screen with Willem Dafoe in The Lighthouse. I think he smoldered with an elephant in Water for Elephants. That guy has got it. So for me, when you got characters who act like robots, the world they're in kind of seems like a big clockwork creation. And because of that, we keep getting told in this film again and again that the world's going to end, the world's going to end. But I sat there thinking, oh, because it's Nolan and he does visuals so well, I wonder what that's going to look like. That'll be cool. And that's a problem. That's not good when you're rooting for the end of the world. But you know what? Within any given scene, as I said, I was there. This guy can stage action. He can deliver set pieces. Now, as soon as the scene would be over, I'd be reaching for the connective tissue and not finding it. I'd be trying to puzzle it through. I would try to take a step back and think to myself, why did this scene just happen? And I always would feel like I was missing something. And I have since learned that is not entirely unintentional on Nolan's part, as he described to Ari Shapiro recently on All Things Considered.
I've always enjoyed movies that, you know, if you want to see it a second time, you're going to see a different movie. You're going to see different layers in it. And that's fun. The challenge is, my job as a filmmaker is to make sure that the first time you see the movie, you are entertained and you are gripped. And that you can't lose sight of. And, you know, that's a challenge and something I spend a lot of time wrestling with.
Well, I mean, that tracks, right? Because, I mean, you think about it. Memento, Inception, Dunkirk. All those movies, for me, benefited from a second viewing because when you watch it a second time, you get added depth, added resonance. I'm worried that the second time I see it, the different layer I'm going to get is basic plot comprehension. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think that's totally true. I think that when I was thinking about it, Tenet is fun and frustrating. And I think that maybe like that's honestly how I feel when I approach a lot of Nolan's work. Mm-hmm. I come at his filmography as a person who likes the experience of seeing a Nolan movie in theaters. I don't feel like I reap the rewards of the repeated viewings. I'm not a kind of person who wants to get into like the deep Reddit dive of all of the layers of the different set pieces in Inception 10 years later. Mm-hmm. But the benefit of the second viewing is that you have control over it. Mm-hmm. So Nolan was pretty adamant about this being an in-theater viewing experience. And I guess he's obviously keen on you experiencing it again because he wants you to pick it apart. But at the same time, one of the qualms that I have with this movie is the fact that you can't hear anything. Mm-hmm. You uncover the reason that the sound mixing is like this. However, I'm a person that prefers to watch movies with captions. Again, I found myself fiddling with the volume up and down and up and down at the drive-in. So when I watched it, you know, with the added benefit of captions and being able to fiddle with the volume, like that was a better viewing experience for me.
Oh, Lindsay, you are so right. I mean, folks at home, if you glean nothing from this conversation, know that two words will unlock most of this film for you, or at least put you on equal footing with it. And those two words are closed captioning. Because here's the thing. This film starts, and urgent dialogue is being shouted through gas masks. And I was like, oh my God, it's Bane. It's Bane all over again. This guy cannot get that. If you want a sound mix that has, you know, a roaring ship engine plus helicopter blades plus music going quang, then you can't mask your actors, hide their mouths, and then have them shout through mask if you want us to know what the hell's being said. But you can if you turn on the closed captioning. And also, not for nothing, this is not the kind of dialogue that we can glean from context cues, because this dialogue contains lines like, get the other sections of the algorithm through the hypocenter. And you're like, what? I mean, I paused the screen and I tried to parse that sentence. And there's also another one where one character screams while they're riding or driving catamarans. I don't know what the term is. They shout, "You can't jibe a boat like this." And I was so grateful for the closed captioning because I'm sorry, jibe is, unless you're Popeye, jibe is just not a word that comes up a lot. But that scene and others on the yacht where he's tangling with the evil Russian arms dealer and he got all the crisp suits and the cashmere polo shirt buttoned all the way to the tops, a lot of reviews called out the Bond parallels, but the tone here is all Nolan. It's not a sexy film. It's a very dour film in a very Nolan-esque way. If Lars von Trier directed For Your Eyes Only, mm-hmm. that's kind of vibe I'm getting. But yeah, I'm so glad you pointed out the closed captioning. I think that's a very important point.
And one thing you said, too, about the dourness of it, it does seem like there's a recurring Nolan-ness in which emotions are, they're on the back burner.
Uh-huh.
And that was definitely something that made me feel a little less satisfied in this, that I think that there were hints at emotions, but they felt a little lacking.
Yeah, but I wouldn't call this film humorless, as I've read some critics do, because, you know, I wrote a bit about when he did his Batman films, and when he did those Batman films, he was determined that everything seemed grounded, very practical, very real. And that approach extends here. There is a scene where John David Washington, as the protagonist, faces off against a bunch of dudes holding a cheese grater, and there's a moment where the cheese grater scrapes against the dude's face and you can hear him go, ow, which is exactly what would happen. So verisimilitude in all things.
Yes. I've thought a lot about this film since I saw it. There was a lot of talk about, you know, this film getting pushed back. And now there's been so much conversation about the way that people will experience films in 2021. But now that we know that there's a different model moving forward, I hate his criticism of it and I get it. But I was frustrated this summer just kind of watching that play out. I don't think Tenet was maybe the right movie to reopen the movie experiences. There's not, you know, big names. It didn't feel like there was this big gravitational pull that like the MCU might have. Mm-hmm. I don't know if the Nolan Cinematic Universe can bring in moviegoers.
You know, it's fascinating listening to those two interviews he did with Ari. One about Tenet and releasing this film into theaters, which, you know, basically boiled down to public health, schmublic health. And a follow-up one he did when Warner's, his studio, announced that they would be sending all of their 2021 film slate to HBO Max. He's very critical of that. And it just seems like he would hate the way that I saw this film, which was on a big screen at home, but paused it after an hour and a half to go to bed, watch it with subtitles, and then also had Wikipedia on hand just in case I missed anything. I think he would hate that film experience, but that seems like it's the new normal, one way or the other.
And for me, that was the optimal viewing experience, that like I actually kind of enjoyed having captions, and I needed to mess with the volume. So apologies to Christopher Nolan, but I needed all that.
Yeah, dude. It's the new normal. Deal with it. Tenet is on VOD now for purchase and will be rentable in early January. We want to know what you think about it. Find us at facebook.com/PCHH and on Twitter at PCHH. That brings us to the end of our show. Lindsay McKenna, thanks for being here.
Thank you so much.
And of course, thank you for listening. We will see you all tomorrow.
I'm Guy Raz, and on NPR's How I Built This, how Tim Ferriss, as an entrepreneur, author, investor, and podcaster, turned himself into a multi-million dollar brand. Subscribe or listen now.